You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to your favorite day of the week. This is Locked On NBA, featuring myself, Anthony Irwin, and Adam Morris. Adam, you have to be doing better than Wolves Twitter, right? Like everybody across the NBA is doing better than Wolves Twitter today.
Well, I think as part of Nuggets Twitter, I am doing at least as good.
Ooh, yeah. That's
as Wolves Twitter and everyone else.
Fair point. As always, Adam and I host the Friday shows, and what we're going to do to start the show is we both watched the San Antonio and Golden State game. We have a couple points to make about that. We always finish the first segment with the funniest thing that we saw across the NBA last night, and then what we're going to do from there is we're going to get into a conversation about Kawhi Leonard and everything that's kind of going on there, and then Adam and I think we actually share the same take on Golden State, which is kind of too bad. But neither Adam and I are as high on Golden State, so we're going to talk about how vulnerable they might be.
That's like a hot take tease, I'll be honest, because my take is significantly more mild than that. not as high on them as in, like, I don't think they'll go 16-1. But we'll save that for later.
All right. So let's go ahead. I'll let you make the first point about what you saw from San Antonio, Golden State. It was a fun game. It went down to the wire, as you would kind of expect between these two teams. But what was one of the things that you noticed from the game?
Really, it's just big picture stuff. And I think with the Spurs, and we'll probably get into a little bit of this maybe even a little bit later, but the Spurs winning the second and third quarter but getting blown out in the fourth, I thought was pretty descriptive of who they are as a team. Because I think Spurs teams for 20 years have executed and been disciplined and done all these things, but I think this team in particular just doesn't have the talent, especially obviously with Kawhi Leonard out, but just doesn't have the talent when you need to go to a guy to get a bucket. I thought there was a lot of plays in that fourth quarter where the ball was really popping, it was moving around the horn and guys were cutting and everything was great. It just ended up in the hands of somebody that you didn't really trust to knock down the shot, and that's how I would put this Spurs team. They do everything all the classic Spurs teams have done over the last two decades, other than finish the play, and they finish it at just 90% of the level of what other Spurs teams have.
I thought, to that point, I thought it was really interesting. The last play that they ran to get a three-pointer got themselves a wide open. I don't know if it was by design, if it was design chaos, and then somebody was supposed to just pop open right there at the very end. But I think it was Bryn Forbes who was wide open. There was nobody within 10 feet of him. And he barely drew iron on the shot. And I thought you put that point perfectly. My point about the game was also big picture. And it's that the Spurs are missing Kawhi Leonard. Steph Curry exits the game in the first quarter with a turned ankle, though it sounds like, according to Ramona Shelburne and others, that Curry was kind of walking around. He wasn't limping or anything. There was no boot on his foot. So that's good. That's good news for everybody.
But it should be stated that they find themselves in a rare fight for playoff positioning. At this point in the season, the last several years, they've been so far ahead that it hasn't mattered. Now it does. And so even if he just misses 2-3 games, you know, that could be the difference between getting the one seed or the two.
What I still found interesting from the game, though, was that, you know, the Spurs are missing Kawhi, Warriors are missing Steph, and Spurs were also missing Powell, though, too. You know, that's he is no Kawhi Leonard. He is no Steph Curry. But you're still missing these players who are useful NBA players. And yet the game still was played, in my opinion, at a playoff level. You know, there was the shot making wasn't necessarily as high as you would expect between the two teams. Especially the Warriors, were off for good chunks of the game. And then they kind of turned it on late. Kevin Durant remembered, oh yeah, that's right, I'm Kevin Durant, and then kind of took over. But the organizational stability in both of those teams and both of those franchises to be able to miss the names that they are missing and still go out there and compete the way that they did, to me, it says a ton about what it takes to be successful sustainably in the NBA. And I was really blown away by how cleanly played the game was, how interesting and entertaining the game was, despite missing two guys of the caliber of Steph Curry and Kawhi Leonard.
I You know, for the Spurs, I kind of see it because I think, again, that's just the Spurs MO. That's what they do. But I think with Golden State, I thought they were pretty sloppy, actually. And I don't want to give too much away because I want to talk about that in our third segment. But even this game, you know, you mentioned Kevin Durant realized he was the best player on the court. That's the luxury that Golden State has. And I think it disguises some of maybe some of the underlying issues with the team. I thought defensively they were a step slow tonight, and actually have been really for most of the season, but tonight in particular. And they just won on sheer talent. I mean, at the end of the game, as I mentioned, as much as the Spurs executed, they didn't have the guys that can knock down the shots, whereas Kevin Durant was knocking down shots that weren't even that good of shots, to be honest. He just couldn't be guarded. It couldn't be defended.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's a such thing as a bad shot with Kevin Durant.
Yeah, it's kind of true.
All right, do you have anything else to say about the game specifically?
Not really. I found it, if I could have made a prediction, like a bold prediction going into this game, knowing that Curry would get hurt in the first, because obviously I wouldn't have predicted that, but knowing from that point on how it would go, it probably went exactly how I thought. The Spurs winning those middle quarters and then losing so overwhelmingly the fourth quarter to kind of make everything else null.
All right, so what we're going to do next then is talk about the funniest things that we saw from last night across the NBA. I started last week. Do you want to do the honors this week?
I could go with Mark Davis sitting courtside tonight at the Warriors game, which I think is low-hanging fruit. That one might be too easy, and it's not even like I have anything for him. It's just the photo was hilarious. But
my favorite thing, though, if I could really quick on that point, is that he's sitting courtside with John Gruden, the newest Raiders head coach. And I feel like John Gruden walks into a room with Mark Davis and just says, like, I'll tell you what, man, that's a cool haircut right there. You know?
That's just the John Gruden impression. Look at that. What a versatile host you are, Anthony. You know, but that was good. No, you're right, man. Imagine being so rich you just don't care what your hair looks like. I think that's impressive. Yep. My funniest thing, it actually wasn't anything from tonight. This was a thing from basketball Twitter. I missed most of the night, but I saw some things going along, and I saw a photo of the 2003 NBA lottery draft class, and every single one of them, LeBron James, I mean, some big names, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, they're all wearing suits that are probably 8 sizes wider than what was worn today. I mean, yeah. It was, you forget that era was 2003. Weren't JNCOs like the 90s? Those weren't 2000s, but these suits were like, I mean, the legs on them, you could fit an elephant in every one of them. And Kirk Heinrich is in the picture, and he's wearing like a size 50 suit.
Of course.
And he looks like he kind of looks like somebody, you know, when kids in cartoons or in movies, they stand on the shoulder of other kids to like disguise as adults. That's what he looks like. Yeah. He looks like he's a kid standing on the shoulders of another kid in an oversized suit. Yeah. It made me think of, it's only 15 years ago, 2003.
Yep.
Man, fashion has really changed.
Oh, I want to know where, like, if in 15 years it goes back to it. Like, if everybody's, wow, everybody wore really tight clothes back then.
Throwback.
All right, so my funniest thing, and it was not from the San Antonio, it was not from the Golden State game. But at one point tonight, Hassan Whiteside and Joel Embiid, who have a fairly fun little rivalry between the two of them. And what I'm going to do here is see if we can make this work, but I sent Adam the link to it, and he's going to play it from the specific spot before he hits play. It's hilarious because this is the Heat broadcast of the play, and Hassan Whiteside, Joel Embiid get kind of tangled up, and Whiteside kind of reaches out to touch Embiid and let him know that he's there. Embiid's elbow just happens to go back, and the Heat broadcast acts as if Embiid just shot Whiteside. And from there, I'll let you pick it up.
All right, here we go. I've got the slow-mo. I've got it. Okay. Oh, yeah, they kind of bump elbows a little bit.
And then do you see the...
Both... You know, there's almost a synchronization with they're both with their hands up.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what happens, there is Whiteside reaches out, hits Embiid's elbow and slaps himself in the face, and the Heat broadcast freaks out and actually uses the term, Embiid just beat Whiteside with a close fist. They did, and then eventually they kind of realize, oh wait, yeah, nope, that was all our guy. That was definitely
I've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and there's definitely like that happens every day where like, you know, one of them will get grazed just barely, and it'll be like, oh, the other one hit me. It's like, no, I saw it happen. That's not what happened.
All right, so we're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back on the other side, we are going to get to the Kawhi Leonard kind of saga that's going on with San Antonio. Both Adam and I have takes. My Lakers exceptionalism might make an appearance. I'm just warning you guys. We'll get to that here in a second. So, Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs for a long time felt like the match made in heaven. And you made the point before we went live that he was one of the guys, the kind of guys that they would kind of draft, because they draft guys who don't seem that interested in the superstardom and the stardom and all of those things, with Tim Duncan being like the act, you know, the spur of all spurs, right? And so what's happened recently, though, it seems that Kawhi has kind of evolved and is actually interested in those kinds of things. I'll let you pick up the story from there and give your 2 cents on it. And I do think that it's worth noting that a lot of what we're going to talk about here, because it's the Spurs, is fairly speculative. Even the reporting that's gone on with this stuff is pretty speculative, and it's hard to know what's actually going on.
Right, and I don't even think it's that speculative. I mean, looking at big picture stuff here, it's speculative in that we don't know, you know, the full story of it. But we do know that there's been at least some tensions between Kawhi and the Spurs. And the Spurs are the Spurs. They've kind of made a conscious decision for the last 20 years to be this buttoned up, boring, you know, quote-unquote boring, not giving a whole lot to the media. We don't need the limelight. We want to fly under the radar. Team. And some of that has come in the form of, you know, Pop was the earliest one to rest players. And I think in the long run, that's led to like smarter scheduling and some positive things. But in the moment, there's been a lot of times with them resting star players on national television, which is a big reason of why NBA players make so much money and all these things, is players do their part to kind of promote the league. I believe that the Spurs have not done their part to in years past to sort of promote the league during the regular season. Now they've rewarded us with some beautiful basketball, some great finals and things like that. Mm-hmm. But now you come to a head where you got a player who's reportedly unhappy with the amount of limelight. And, you know, for me, it's an interesting dynamic. There's a lot of things at play here, but what's so interesting about it is that the Spurs MO has been one thing for so long, but it comes with a sacrifice. The sacrifice is, if you're going to be the boring, you know, not going to be on social media, not going to be doing all these other things to sort of pay into the pie, then you don't get the biggest slice. And I think with Kawhi, a lot of people heard he wants a signature shoe and he wants to be the face. Nobody knows Kawhi. He hasn't done anything to establish that brand, and he's so much a Spur. And he doesn't have to do those things, but he does have to do those things if he wants to get a big shoe deal.
It's so, again, this is where I will admit to any biases that I bring to this conversation. I host Locked On Lakers. I am a lifelong Laker fan. I grew up with huge entertaining personalities like Shaq and Magic and Kobe and all of these guys. And that was just kind of part of the Lakers experience. And Spurs fans have kind of grown up with the opposite, right? Like the Spurs personality is like the commercials that they do locally, but nationally it's just kind of, you get what you get, you know, and you're blessed, as you said, with one of the most stable organizations in all of professional sport.
There's huge rewards to doing things the way that they have done them. And they've reaped those rewards.
Absolutely. But you know, what Kawhi seems to be frustrated with is that you have guys who played for the Lakers who may not necessarily be as good as Kawhi, but
you don't have to throw a May in there, man. There's nobody on the Lakers organization that you don't have to hedge yourself there.
Well, all right, it depends on how you feel about.
I mean, is Ingram better than Kawhi Leonard? I don't know. Maybe he is. It's close.
Well, you know, give
Lakers fan over here.
No, but like, it depends on how you feel about Kobe, right? Like, it. Do you think Kobe?
Oh well, yeah, Kobe, of course. Come on.
Do you feel like Kobe at his peak was exponentially better than Kawhi Leonard? Like the to compare Kobe's brand to Kawhi Leonard's brand, was Kobe that much better than Kawhi? I don't necessarily think so as the player. And yet Kawhi is frustrated because Kobe just won a freaking Oscar, you know, like, and so
Kawhi wants to win Oscars. That's what you're telling me.
Breaking. that would be quite the wrinkle. What I'm watching or what I'm seeing from Kawhi is somebody who I would imagine has seen his basketball mortality in front of him, right? He is now injured. He has missed considerable time. And what he's saying is, my earning potential isn't necessarily, you know, isn't a forever thing. And I need to earn as much as I possibly can. And he goes to Jordan, the brand that is supposed to support him. And he's going to them and saying, hey, what can we do here? And they're saying, you haven't done much for us by way of expanding our brand. And I guess the question is, do the Spurs, to a certain extent, by way of their culture, hold him back a little bit?
Well, of course. I think the answer is definitely is almost certainly yes. I don't know how the Spurs would handle a player that was constantly the LeVar Ball of NBA players. Like, I don't know who that would be, but a guy that's constantly reaching for the light and saying things to bring attention to himself. I don't know how they would handle that. But Lamar, there was a great article on Vice Sports today by Michael Pina about LaMarcus Aldridge that really had a lot of the same undertones. And it was him sort of opening up and talking about how misunderstood he is because he doesn't like to talk to the media, so he doesn't, and all these things. And, you know, I think it's a thing across the league with players that they want it both ways, right? They want the media. And I've been credentialed for 4 seasons now covering the Nuggets. I've been inside locker rooms covering all players around the league. And there is this sense of, and I totally get why they distrust the media. There's a lot of bad media out there, a lot of them. And there's a lot of people that are just looking for a gotcha moment so that they can get their clicks or whatever. So I get that whole thing. But that is one of the prices and one of the risks that I think every athlete takes when they want to get the benefit of, you know, the media is not PR. The media is there to try to cover something objectively. And sometimes that objectively is going to be, this guy is in a slump or this guy's not doing this well. Even when the writer's wrong, it's a fair game. I think with the Spurs, the metaphor I would use for them, for Game of Thrones watchers out there, it's kind of like the whole faceless man training thing. And that's what Kawhi has been. You have to become no one to be a Spur. And like, he's at the point where he's like gone through all of the training and he's like become a faceless man. And now he wants out. And it's like, you know, you can't be out. The Spurs way is the Spurs way. And if you want out, we'll ship you to LA.
I'd be fine with him being shipped to LA. I'm on the record as to say that I'm perfectly fine with Kawhi Leonard. Hashtag future Laker. All right. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick second here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Golden State Warriors. Adam, it sounds like Adam to a lesser extent than me, but I don't think either of us are necessarily as high on the Lakers as the consensus seems to be across NBA coverage. We'll get to that here in a second. All right, so the Golden State Warriors now have played. They will, heading into this upcoming playoffs, if they make it to the finals, that's 4 straight finals appearances, right?
Yeah.
So that's essentially 100 games played, 400 games played in 4 years. And where I am dubious of the Warriors is that we see the toll that this type of run takes on all teams historically. Steve Kerr is on the record saying that he didn't think that the Bulls would have won 3 straight, or, you know, whether it's 6, 7 straight, had Michael not retired between the 2 three-peats, right? He said that by the time that third finals was up, they were exhausted. He didn't think that they were going to get back to the finals of that fourth year. The Lakers, when they went through their three-peat, by the time that they lost to the Spurs and by the time they eventually lost to the Pistons, it was they were running on fumes. Shaq and Kobe were openly feuding, right?
Right.
And where I tend to now, I think this Warriors team is better than all of those other teams. This is, to me, the best group of basketball players ever to play on the same NBA team ever. But still, they're fighting history here. And, you know, while we might want to say, well, they are playing at 70% and they are still only a half game back or whatever it is that they are behind Houston, these types of runs take a toll on everybody involved. And these types of wear and tear that we're seeing this very night that we're recording, Steph turns his ankle again after already missing 13 games this season. Mm-hmm. This type of stuff does take a toll.
To your first point, this Warriors team actually hasn't proven that they can flip a switch. Mm-hmm. I think we just assume all teams can, but for the last three seasons, they've had historic run. They've won a lot of games. They haven't had to flip a switch because the switch has been on all regular season, all postseason. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of, when people say, oh, well, we know what they'll bring in the playoffs, I tend to believe that just on the history of the NBA, but we haven't seen that with this team. And what we do see with this team is that they've got some guys in the rotation right now that just can't play. I mean, in my opinion, they've got, unlike previous seasons where I felt like they've had eight, maybe nine guys that you always rely on, they've got four superstars in Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson. They've got three very high-level very good role players in Livingston, Iguodala, and Zaza. And then they've got some guys that you just don't know about slash might not actually be any good. JaVale McGee is not a guy. I know that he has done some good things for them. You know, he's kind of been up and down for them. But are you really counting on JaVale McGee to win a series against Anthony Davis? You know, say Anthony Davis gets Draymond Green into foul trouble, and now it's like, okay, JaVale, we need you to go protect the paint again. Like, no, that's not going to happen.
Right.
And you know, Quinn Cook's playing, and Nick Young, another guy. Nick Young brings value sometimes, but do you trust him? If you have to go against the Houston Rockets, and it's like, it's going to come down to Nick Young, Omri Caspi versus, you know, the equivalent on Houston's roster. I just don't know. Kevon Looney, another guy I would not trust in a playoff series personally if I was a Warriors fan. So for me, the question is, can they flip the switch? They have some guys on there that I don't like. And then on top of that, there's some things that are just kind of off about them this year. And again, it might fall into the switch category, but Draymond Green doesn't look like himself. Is that just a switch thing where the playoffs come, he's going to flip a switch? Iguodala looks a little bit off. Is he just a bit older, or is he a guy that can flip a switch? Those are big questions to me that I don't think they have. I haven't felt this way about them over the previous three seasons, and I feel that now going into a playoffs.
To the point that you're making about especially Draymond Green, 538 wrote an article a few weeks back, maybe a couple months back, but they basically said this is kind of the time frame that Draymond Green starts slowing down athletically. What Golden State's what's it called? The death lineup? It's called the death lineup,
yeah.
Right?
Come on.
I blanked. But the Golden State's death lineup is incredibly intimidating, right? But it does take a ton of energy to play that way. Draymond Green has to be all over the court.
Right.
You know, and the more that they rely on it, especially in playoff settings, where some have argued, former players have said that every minute feels like two regular season minutes, basically, in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the more that you play like that, and now we're in year four, and maybe next year we're into year five. But for right now, what makes me a little nervous is that death lineup takes an insane amount of energy to play that way. And somebody like Draymond, if you see just a little bit of slippage, and it's something that we wouldn't even be able to perceive with our bare eyes, with that type of minor slippage right there starts to show up in ways. And those inches matter in playoff games when you have matchups like Houston, or, you know, if San Antonio gets healthy, or whichever matchup it might be, those inches matter in the playoffs.
But that brings me to this point, this next point, my final point about them, which is, as great as they are, and I still think they're the favorite. Like, when we talk about it, it's more about would you take the field or them. And I think for the first time, maybe I would take the field. And it's not that there's any other team I'm picking to beat them. I think they're vulnerable. They haven't had to do – we talk about Iguodala and getting up there, Draymond, and just some of the fatigue factor. What if they have to play – and this is within the realm of possibility – the Spurs in the first round, who I think they will beat because they're just more talented.
Yep.
But Popovich in a playoff series makes other teams show their hand. That's just what he does. And if you have to show your hand in the first round, that changes things. That gives other people great scouting opportunities. Minnesota in the second round with a healthy Jimmy Butler. It's another – or Oklahoma City, one of these teams that, again, isn't going to beat them. But it's going to take something out of them. It's going to take some energy and whatever. Then Houston, which we know will be a slugfest. And then whoever comes out of the East, which will be another at least challenging series. So I think that they're going to have to play a first and second round series that will be more challenging than what they've seen in the previous years.
Yeah, that and again, these things just – they pile on, man. NBA playoff series are tough, and they've gone through quite a few of them at this point. And you know, we'll see how it all turns out. It's an interesting conversation. Let us know what you think. I am at Anthony Irwin LA on Twitter. Adam is at Adam_Morris on Twitter. You can find my podcast on Locked On Lakers on iTunes. You can follow Locked On Nuggets on iTunes. Adam is the EIC of Denver Stiffs. I am the EIC of Lakers Outsiders. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If you have any questions or comments or whatever, leave them on iTunes in a 5-star review, and we'll try to get to them as best we can. Other than that, we have a really exciting weekend in the NBA coming up. So the coverage of those games on the other side, whether, you know, on Monday, is going to be really good. Just some matchups that we have our eye on. So we have Houston and Portland. Both those teams come in hot. The day that you guys are listening to this, Houston and Toronto play each other. That's a really good game. And recaps of those games are going to be on the other side on Monday, hosted by whoever is hosting Locked On Lakers that day. So thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again next Friday.